Hello and welcome to another episode of the Classic Pinball Podcast. My name is George, and today I'm joined by my co-host Dave. We're outdoors in New Hampshire. Yeah, we've left Massachusetts. We're across the border today on a beautiful, non-humid, non-90-plus degree day. Dave, how are you?
Doing great, George, and good afternoon. And this will be a great day to ride a roller coaster at Cedar Point. Like today,
I don't know if my back could take it, but yeah, it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, as someone once said. Today we're going to talk about, we're a little late, and we told you in our last episode that we were going to be on vacation. I did some fun things, but we went to Allentown. Dave, I'm going to let you start, since you beat me there by a couple of days and got to see the opening or the setup. And then day one, I came in on Saturday, day two, and we'll talk about that in a couple minutes.
So, yeah, Maureen and I decided to make a whole big trip out of this, you know, nice summertime venture, Allentown, and loaded up a game because we're going to go and deliver a game on the way down to Darien, Connecticut, a restored Silver Ball Mania we did. So went 3 hours, delivered that, set it up. Little girl, I think 6 years old, the daughter was so excited about it. She's jumping up and down. I got a pinball machine, yay, you know. I said, you can be the first one to try it. And so she tried it out. I had the high score set real low, so she went pop, pop, pop. She got the high game, and she's psyched about it. Was thanking her father up and down for it. So that was nice. It was great to have that feedback when you deliver a game like that. It really made their day and made their weekend. In fact, their grandmother, her grandmother was one that bought the game for them months ago for me to restore up. And they're going to go see her the next day. So I talked to the grandmother on the way out to Allentown, and it said, well, you're going to be a really favorite grandmother now because your granddaughter loved the game. So they were all happy. So we continued on, went to Pennsylvania, went to Allentown show, and we met Dave Matrando in there, who does a wonderful job restoring the EMs, and got in there
you who don't remember or haven't listened to our initial podcast, he's a restorer of electromechanical games, and we interviewed him for Pentastic 2 years ago, Dave.
Yeah.
So he was a winner, I believe. I don't remember what game. You could go listen to that episode.
Yeah, he's definitely...
Surf and Safari? Was that the game?
Surfer? Maybe it was Surfer? Surfer? Maybe? Yeah, Gottlieb Surfer, I think he might have won for that. Yep, he had a couple good ones there. So we got in early to the show. Usually you have to be a vendor or bring a game in, you know, to get into for the show early. And we just went in there and helped Dave. And so we were helpers. So we got in early.
So you snuck in.
We did sneak in. Yeah, we did. I brought my two-wheeler and we snuck in. But you know, I wasn't just going to be there and sneak in and just, you know, pull a fast one. It's like, you know, I'm going to do some help here and help the show, so which we did. So we helped Dave set up two games, a 4 million BC. Beautiful shape one, too. It looked like home use only. And he had a nice game to start with, and he made it even better. And also a top card. So he set them both in free play. And he sold the 4 million BC really quick. I mean,
that
was a nice game.
Introductions to pinball when I was a kid. Funtown Pier, Seaside Park, New Jersey. 10 cents a play.
Yep, 10 cents a play. I remember playing that game at a pizza shop down Cape Cod, I believe in Dennis or Dennisport, years ago. And I still remember the game, the Zipper Flippers and multi-ball game for 1971. Pretty
ahead
of time.
And that elevated ramp?
Yeah.
I don't even know. What would you...
Well, like Fireball Classic, the little skill shot ramp thing.
What do you call it?
Skill shot ramp.
Not a ramp.
It's a wooden ramp. It's an incline. Incline. Wooden incline, yes.
You owe me a beer.
Okay. Wooden incline with three little wire switches on there. You try to get it just up so far that you get the pop bombers to light up. So that's a lot of fun. Very tempted to buy that game. The price was right, too. It's like, I was taking home a bunch of glass, so I couldn't take it home anyway. So helped him out. He was very thankful for that. Walked around the show. It was great. Talked to a bunch of people there. Joe, who goes by JR Pinball on Pinside. He was wearing a Wayne Nyans. That's his little icon, his Wayne Nyans name tag. So I didn't know who it was. I thought, like, who is that, your grandfather? It's like, no, it's Wayne Nyans. You know, I heard the guy from, the guy who's been around forever. But I guess he told me that that day, that first day of Allentown, he turned 103, and he's still kicking. On the 29th, he was 103 years old on that day for Allentown. So he's a longtime Gottlieb designer, created Slick Chick. And I found out a story about Slick Chick, a famous game, for, I think, from the late 60s, is they couldn't, they're trying to figure out a name for the game. They had the idea of the X pattern of putt bumpers. I believe it's like 5 and 5 or 4 and 4 in a cross kind of situation or X situation. And they're trying to think, how can we, what can we spell the thing right? We don't really know. And they're going to lunch that day thinking about it, and they went by this chicken place, and it was called Slick Chick. They go, ah, that's what it is. We'll make it Slick Chick. So it was named after a restaurant.
I have one. Have you ever been to a Cluck U?
No, I have not been to a Cluck U.
That is an actual chicken chain. Cluck U.
Wow. Is that, so it's like Cluck University?
Let's take the off ramp. Look, let's cut to the chase for a sec.
Sure, go ahead.
Everybody wants to know,
yes,
is Thursday the day for the deals? Was there a lot of exchanging going on before the show even started?
There was some. I wouldn't say it was like Fast and Furious like years ago, but there was some action going on. I'd say this. I think every day had something going on. I think the next day, Dave was in the right place, right time, where he saw some bunch of stuff being unloaded.
And, you're gonna cry, people.
And yeah, there was a Fathom being unloaded in the flea market area. And Dave was right there to say, oh, let me see if I can help you here. And it's like, oh, Fathom, what went up for that? Oh, I don't know, I think the guy in the back, was he on 7 or 7? Yeah, I think 750. Okay, I'll take it. Well, I didn't even open it up for you yet, dude. I don't care, I'll take it. 750 for a Fathom. And the plate wasn't in bad shape either. Cadmo was real nice.
I think 99 out of 100 people would have done the same damn thing.
In fact, after Dave took possession of it, so many people came over to him and said, Dave, I'll give you $2,000 for it right now as it sits. He could have flipped it easy.
Sure.
But he has plans to really make a nice one. He's going to put a new play field in and make it a real nice game and keep it for a while, maybe sell it down the road. But he's going to make a nice restoration.
Well, we still have not seen Fathom 2.0 yet. Here we are at the end of August.
Really?
They said they were going to start pushing them out. Now, I haven't heard anybody talking other podcasts, and there's a couple people who would have frontline information. You know who you are. I'm hoping they get out there because I'd like to see one.
I just know 20 years ago, I had two Fathoms. One I bought for $250, the other one I bought for $600, both working. And I made one good one and sold off the other one working for $850 to this guy. And it's 20, and he was all pissed off, but a month later, like, oh, one of the drop targets was sticking, and I, you know, he's kind of bitching about it. It's like, dude, you have a Fathom for $850. You're doing great. He didn't even know what he had. Then he sold it shortly thereafter, I think, for either a loss or even. And then I talked to him years later, and he said, I said, don't you wish you kept that Fathom now? You know? I told him, I said, it's a great deal. And now, you know, now he knows. I knew what that game was years ago when I got it for $250. I said, what a steal. What a wonderful game that is. Where else are we going with this, George? Oh, Guns N' Roses.
You want to talk about playing
that? Yeah, we met you and your friend, well, Jack.
Right. Let's set the stage. First of all, we had to wait a half an hour to play it because the person playing in front of us had played the game before and was actually very good at it, and it was fun to watch, so we learned a few things. But the four of us played, Maureen, yourself, and Jack, and I. That game went on for over a half an hour with four people who have never played the game before, and it was fun, but it's multi-ball mania. That was my takeaway.
My takeaway was it's like playing Guitar Hero.
Okay, I'm not a Guitar Hero guy, so what do you mean?
Well, because there's like a little gas gauge thing on the side there. When you're in all these different modes you're getting into the game, you start a mode, and it's all about you're in a concert, and you're playing with Guns N' Roses in a concert with one of the band members by hitting all these different shots it wants you to hit, and it keeps telling you to hit the shots. The more you hit the shots, the more it jams up the fuel gauge. the more you keep missing and missing and missing shots, the fuel gauge goes lower and lower and lower and lower until finally you fail, you get booed off stage, you lose the ball.
Right, but it was just long playing. I don't know. My friend Jack, he didn't have very good words for it either. And nice looking game, fun, but I don't think I would want to own one. I'll play it again. I'll put money in it.
I will say, I think it's the best game they've made so far. I think it's their best title from what I've played
and
all their
feature
stuff.
Feature rich. There's a lot to it.
And it's a really good, it's an immersive concert experience. You feel like it gives you that. They were going for a concert experience that you're part of, and they achieved that. And I like the game, the little concert lights in there going back and forth. It had a really good, but for 10 grand plus, I don't know if I like it that much, George.
Hey, all I know is we didn't record that particular game, and I ended up winning, folks. So I do win from time to time. We just didn't record.
You won?
Yeah, I came in first.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you weren't paying attention. Yeah, don't you remember Jack was giving up and I pulled the plunger and the ball started going down the play field? He's like, hey, what's going on here? I go, I pulled the plunger. You said you didn't want to play anymore.
Right.
No, I want to beat you now. And then he didn't end up beating me. It was pretty fun.
Yeah, that was good.
Right. He's like, I got to watch you. Yeah, you do. Be careful what you say.
Be careful what you say. Yep.
You want to, let's dovetail into Rick and Morty.
Okay.
What'd you think of that?
I like Rick and Morty a lot, but that game is like it's heavily relying upon you knowing and liking the show. If you don't know or like the show, I think it would leave you kind of flat because it's kind of a basic game.
I didn't think there were a lot of features to the
game.
A lot
of humor.
The call outs were great.
Right.
Enough to go buy it? No. Put money in it? Absolutely.
Yeah, put money into it, sure. If it's out in an arcade somewhere, sure, I'll put some money into
it. Would have been fun to play in a different kind of environment where you're not hearing every other machine. It was kind of hard to hear. They had it cranked up, but it would be fun to, be by itself and hear all the call-outs and experience the game that way. Not as much fun in an arcade setting.
What I found was kind of weird is they have different levels of adult language levels on it. And if you even turn it all the way down to zero, you're still going to get some no matter what.
Right.
Because that's what it is.
But infrequent, where if you put it up to 100%.
Oh, it's like constantly.
Right.
It's funny.
It's filthy is what it is.
But I don't know what some of these parents are thinking. They're bringing their little six-year-old Johnny up to it and they're having him play it. And it's like it's swearing like a sailor. And it's like, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't put my kid in front of that game.
Yeah, I'm not so sure that would be a family-friendly game.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
What else do we hear?
I have a whole handful of stuff.
All right. Go ahead. You go ahead.
Okay. Hadn't played this in a while, folks. I know, again, newer game, sorry. But we're doing the Allentown Review Show. Jack and I played Aerosmith. That's a pretty fun game. I don't know if you've ever played that.
I have played the game. Very colorful, fun game.
That treasure chest with the Joker, Jokey, or whatever that thing's name. Where
throw the ball in there.
Throws it in.
Toys in the Attic.
Right. That was pretty cool. Yep. Like that. We had fun playing that. We played El Dorado. We played Meteor. I think I played that with you. The one thing I found funny, and he's there every year, and if you've been to Allentown, Jeff. I don't know Jeff's last name. With all the play fields, he must have had 100-something play fields.
These are the new play fields?
No, all the old. You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, the tons all along the wall.
I felt so bad for him.
He wasn't selling anything, was he?
Well, a lot of that was firewood.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jeff. Yeah. But, I just felt bad for him because it was a hot day, and I kept looking at it and going, when this is over,
you now have
to put that all back in the truck. Now, I helped him a couple of times years ago and acquired some pretty good stuff, but I worked my tail off to put stuff out of it. I can't imagine then loading it all back in the truck to take it home. That would make me sad.
What were those going for? What do you want from me? Like $50 a piece, maybe, but not nowadays. Probably $300 a piece. Who knows?
I'm sure you could have negotiated if you needed parts, and I think that's really what it comes down to. If you needed certain parts that you knew you couldn't buy or find anywhere, it's great to buy old playfields. But as far as restoring the playfields, no, they were they were pretty bad. They were definitely operator played games. My buddy Jack did pretty well, though, selling. If he had listened to me from the beginning, I kept telling him, just put the stuff in the car. You're going to sell it. And he fought me tooth and nail.
Because he wanted to do what? He wanted to pre-sell?
He was just being lazy.
Okay.
So he brought, old Chicago backlass, two blackjack, Bally blackjack backlasses, a Bally blackjack playfield. Am I missing something? No. Oh, and then he had the, you'll hear this later on in the episode, he had a Fireball 2 new old stock playfield. And we met this guy, John Owens. Some of you probably know who he is. He has a company that buys and sells playfields and backlasses. And he took everything but the Fireball 2 playfield. And Jack was happy as a clam. And I kept looking at him going, Jack, I told you you would sell it. You found the right guy. He had a couple of tire kickers, but those people lost. This guy, he's like, all this stuff's real nice.
Yeah.
He made an offer. Gone. Wasn't greedy. He said, hey, I got to leave a little bit on for him so he can make a buck.
He got a good deal. John got a good deal.
No, he did. He did. I'm not going to tell people what he got, but you'll hear it later in the episode. We had a quick chat with John talking about that playfield, the Fireball 2 playfield, and his remarks on what he looks for in buying and selling playfields. So it was kind of interesting.
Years ago, a couple years back in Allentown, I bought a Fathom playfield off him. It was a CPR, maybe the second version they did, I think. Maybe the third version, I don't know. But it was a little bit of a B-run or something. But it was still very nice, presentable shape. So I bought it from a decent price because at that point you couldn't get the Fathom playfield from CPR. They were done. So I said, well, I need one for future restoration, so I bought that off him, and a good price. I want to also talk about George. I usually don't participate in the tournaments at these shows because, one, there's like tons of people that are doing it, and it takes all my time is waiting in line, and I don't get to really enjoy the rest of the show, and then I always have to be back at a certain time, and you got to keep... So you're always like a ball and chain to attorney. And you got to make a choice. Do I want to do attorney, or do I want to enjoy the show, play, and do flea market stuff and buy things and chat it up and so forth. So this time around, I saw that there weren't many people waiting to play a tournament. The tournament games were a lot of good classic titles there, like Centaur, Surf Champ, Gottlieb Far Out, a Catacomb with a CPR playfield installed, and a couple other. I think
so. This was just a classics tournament.
There was two. There was a classics tournament, and they same people were running it. Classics tournament, and right next to it, it was a the main tournament that had everything in it. You know, the newer stuff and the older stuff. So I said, and basically it was all high score tournament, which I liked too. I liked the format. The format was, you know, you have six tries to get it done, six times only, and you get to pick, I think, three games that you can try on or whatever, and you try to get the high score. So, you know, so if you get, say, the high score on Centaur, you get 100 points.
So do you play all six and you can throw out three of the scores?
You can play any titles you want, but you got to play, you want to get 300 points is perfect score. So you want to get 100 points on each, meaning you want to get the top score in Centaur, let's say the top score in Surf Champ and the top score in Far Out, let's say.
Right.
You get the top score in three titles of your choice, you get a perfect 300. So now you go in there. So I went in there, and I said, what am I going to play?
You were all excited before I got there, saying, oh, I did really well, and continue.
I did. I stood like there like this, Mom. Not for long, though. That kind of thing. You know, like the old three students.
I happened to look at the people that had participated in the tournament up until your text to me, and I didn't recognize any names. However, that changed the next day.
Yeah.
And I saw the ringers. The ringers arrived.
Oh, yeah, because I saw the Centaur scores before mine. And there's still, I went in a little bit, you know, mid-afternoon. There were a lot of people playing, you know, at that point. But still didn't have to wait in line. And I saw some scores on Centaur. There was like a 800,000. There was like a 17, a 1.7. And it's like, you know, I can get that. You know, so 1.7 was 100 points. So I played one game on it. I got like, you know, 900. It's like, now I win it again. I got 1.95. I was a top scorer on Centaur. I had 100 points on it. It's like, yes. So I thought, I'm a shoo-in for that one, right? I really wanted two, but I got close.
And then the tournament players showed up on Saturday.
Well, then I went and played some Surf Champ. I got like the 90th percentile on that. I was up to like 290 points or something early on. So I was like, okay, I'm good. And I already, you know, I shot all my bullets. I did all six. Then, as you said, the ringers came in. The people you know from other tournaments.
Well, the two tournament players that I recognized right off were Ron Hallett and Jerry Bernard. And Jerry's an awesome player. Ron's not shabby either, but Jerry is.
I don't think either one of them took down my Centaur score, though. It was somebody else.
I'd have to go look, but it doesn't matter. They're seasoned tournament veterans. You see them at all the big events, and I believe they did pretty well. I think Jerry Bernard did well. I don't know about Ron, but I think Jerry did very well.
I really liked you know, even though I didn't place in the money at all, I think I placed 13th out of, I don't know, 50 or 100, whatever it was. You know, I still did okay. I was in the top five for a little while. But I had fun because it was a quick one and done play, have a good time with it, but not be married to it. And I could do the rest of the show.
Right,
so that was
like,
great.
Like Pintastic, if I recall the last time, people were just playing because there were lines. And if you were a serious tournament player, you didn't leave that area. You were married to the tournament.
And you, on those tournaments like Pintastic, you can dump money, dump, constantly, buy in. So, like this one here, you're limited. You better do well in those six games because you're six games and done. I like that.
Right.
Know? So that was good like that. So I'd do that again. In fact, if I was ever going to run a tournament with some of my classic games, I'd do the same thing these guys did. I'd put up, you know, a nice six bank of classics and do it like the same way. Allentown, right? Anything else for Allentown, George? You had any thoughts?
Other than we didn't have Fa.
I did.
You did. I didn't.
One
because
time.
Because I was a little food needy at the time and went for the turkey dinner instead, which was quite good. Other than that, I don't have much else to... I wasn't there long enough. We got there Saturday morning and left early Saturday afternoon. Played some games. Looked around, but, you know, July is not the time to hold a pinball show. I think you're competing with a lot of other summer activities. I think he did all right, but I don't think it was nearly the crowd that they would have when they do it in early May.
I think, but as we know, he had to do it this time because of all the stuff we went through the last year. And this was a sweet spot. This was the eye of the storm, the calm part of the storm, where you could do it. So an opportunity before things get wacky again. And I think he did well in spite of all that. He had a lot of things going against him, like, again, weddings and vacations and whatever. And then, you know, a couple people still scared to go out of the house kind of thing, too. But there are a lot of those people that, you know, were a little fearful, but they were. I did see some of them at the
I
show.
I thought there would be bigger demand. I thought there would be more people there. I just think summer's a tough time. Tough time to hold a show, and that's why you don't see them often. I think right now the things that are doing well pinball related in the summer are tournaments, because you haven't had, you know, tournaments in a year and change, and I think that's really where the activity is right now. We'll see what's the next show up. Probably Expo is the next big one. We'll see how many people attend that in Chicago. That's going to be interesting.
York's October, right? Isn't York coming up soon?
Yeah, York is another one. And there's one in Saratoga, I think.
It's coming up soon, or it already happened.
Yeah, it either happened this weekend or it's happening next weekend. I'm so discombobulated. We haven't recorded in, what, probably a month? So we had to get our at least one episode in for the month of August. Hopefully we'll get back to a little bit more of a regular schedule once things calm down. But I'm already filling up fall, so it just seems like we're going at 90, and I know you're busy. We'll talk about it in another episode, but you've been very, very busy doing repair work, which is great.
Yeah, I've been banging out restorations and bringing games in, and, you know, I feel like rawhide, you know, bring them in, get them out rawhide kind of thing, you know, and It's been great. I've been delivering a lot of games to people, seeing their face. You know, they're all happy about getting their nice game.
Well, we could talk about some of the games that you've recently bought too, but I think we'll end it here.
Okay. One more Allentown thing.
Okay.
So on the way out of Allentown, I know a high end collector, huge collection. I won't say who it is, but on the way out, I was going to get some parts from him. So he said, "Oh, let me show you my church." So he bought a church. He had to have something to house his high end collection.
How many games did you tell me he had?
There were 100 or more, and then a couple hundred in a church. So he took out. So basically, he wanted to find a place. His real estate agent, he said, "Well, I got you a place in this section of town with a warehouse." He goes, No. People are going to break all my stuff. No, I need something else. Well, we do have this church that kind of went out of business 10 years ago. On a main street. Sounds good. With houses nearby. Okay, good. So he looked at it. He made friends with the neighbors. The neighbors know what he does, and it's all cool, and he gets along with everybody. He bought it, and he took all the pews out, put rows of games in there. So it's kind of cool because it's almost like a pinball church. You still have all the nice Christian sayings and stuff up there in the background, but you have pinball in there. You know what I mean? So it's really, really weird.
Somebody I bought my hot dog from, John, up in Ontario, Canada. This fits. The Church of the Silver Ball.
Yes.
It was the name of his arcade. Sounds like that could be the name of
this
particular person's
exactly.
collection.
Yep. You got a little bug right there.
I got a bug?
That.
What
there,
kind
no,
of
he
bug?
Went. He went away. You like bugs, George.
And I hate bugs.
He wasn't biting much.
No. And I see, are they called a murder of crows?
Yeah, murder of crows.
Yeah, look at them. Those are my, that's my cleanup crew.
Cleanup crew from
bugs? They keep the riffraff down in the neighborhood.
What's the other thing that's called a murder? What was the other thing, Maureen, you said? A murder of what? No, it was something else. We'll think of it later. There's a couple things with that. But anyway.
Okay, we're going to sign off here, folks. Next episode, Dave and I will talk about his travels and travails. I have a sheet from 2 months ago. We'll go through it. Some of it will be relevant. Some of it will be old news to you. But I want to get it off my plate. So until next time, Dave and George signing off from the Classic Pinball Podcast. See you next time.
See you, folks.
700?
That's where I was probably going to.
If you put it on eBay for 700, you're going to give them $100 of it back.
I might start on an auction maybe and start it off at like 6 and see what happens.
Yeah, so if, you know, with the eBay fees, if you started at 7, you're going to give them right now, if you manage payments, they're going to take 13% back
13%.
Out of it. Yeah, because now it's 12.
See, I was asking Jack that before. I'm recording, just so you know.
Okay.
This is interesting, and it's good for our podcast because this is my audience.
Yep.
So let me just do a real preamble. I'm standing here with my friend Jack and John, who has a booth here at Allentown, and we're discussing Fireball 2. NOS playfield with clear. So continue. You were talking about eBay.
I was just selling for a product like this, you know, hard to find. Obviously, it's a really rare piece. It's in amazing condition. The clear coat's great on it. To the right buyer, it's worth the money. But with anything you sell on eBay, it's time or money,
right?
You're going to give up time to get it sold fast,
right? You got to box this too after you're done, and I'm guessing that's a $75 to $100 bill. It's got to be,
yeah, but
because it's an oversized.
No,
well,
it's not.
No, no,
well,
right.
unless you have a CPR box, which a lot of collectors have spare CPR boxes.
But even so, it's because it's an oversized box. You get nailed on the oversized.
Well, the shipping. Who's ever buying it's paying for
no,
the
I'm
shipping.
Saying, but that adds to the price.
Right.
Your $1,100 playfield just went to $1,200.
Sure, absolutely.
Right, that's what
absolutely.
I'm getting at.
So,
that's why a show is a lot better. You got a guy like John here selling back glasses. It makes sense because people can pull it away. They can see it and they can take it right then and there.
Exactly. So that's the other thing is you put that on, if you get what, you know, I would say 1,000, 1,100 just for the rarity and the condition and the clear coat alone. Because if you bought that NOS and had to have it cleared, then you're back up to the price anyway.
Well, right. Any of the guys, high end.
Yep.
I used Bill Davis.
Yep.
People use other people, but you're at six bills without even blinking.
And I work at a body shop, so that's got the best automotive hard
Right,
clear
Jack.
On
what
now.
Is it again you for see, for the audience?
Right.
It's what sickens.
Leveled inserts. It's not sunken inserts, so it looks really good. And I would say it's totally worth it, but it's just for that particular game.
Exactly.
You're waiting
it's
for the buyer.
For the one who's
so,
got the game.
So you know, if I put that on eBay, I'd start it out at 11. You know, hoping to get lucky, and you just
right.
you time it.
Right.
You,
see what happens.
You
that's...
find out. You see what happens. But when I got you know, my NOS, Evel Knievel I was telling you about,
right?
You know, I thought I'd get more, but I could only pull 900 on it.
Uh-huh.
You know, but good luck finding another NOS Evel Knievel.
Right.
You can buy CPRs all day long now, but an NOS Evel Knievel, forget
it's,
it.
It's two different things.
It's total.
It's, Jack it was asking me, and I told him bits and pieces of what you just spoke about, but we needed somebody like you to give us an education.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just for me, but our audience, just so you hear it from somebody else other than me and my partner who's not here yet. He's still sleeping.
Yeah.
But this is a good education because you try to figure it out. We put it out there. Jack had somebody in the Midwest that wanted that old Chicago, but it was like, how
right.
do you get it there? He didn't want, you know, he wanted to do the handoff.
Right.
And it's like, that's way
no
too complicated.
I don't want to ship no glasses.
Yeah,
no.
So...
Well, I've done them, and I've been successful, but it's
a
hard thing.
I ship a lot of back glasses, but...
You've had your share, I'm guessing.
A few of them break, or...
So, through the years of learning how to do it, I buy special boxes, I have a system. No, I have not had anything break due to my fault, but I've had it where people have got it where it looked like somebody stabbed a forklift through the box.
Right.
A customer called me once, it looked like the UPS driver drove over the box.
Right.
There were tire tracks across the
right.
box.
Right, okay.
So, like...
So he probably did.
Okay, that kind of stuff, no, I can't stop that. That's
no,
not my fault.
That's not your
and
fault.
And that's where I tell them, hold the packaging, because they're paying for that.
Right.
Okay, but I ship to Europe, I ship all
oh.
over the world.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God, yeah. It's
great.
Once you get the system, I bought an NOS Gottlieb... Cleopatra glass years ago, and from the factory, it was only a 2-inch thick box, but they had edge cushioning for 1 inch all the perimeter of the glass. That was it. So glasses break when they take edge shots.
Yeah.
You use corners, right? Do you use cardboard corners on yours?
I have 2 inches of cushioning all the way around the edge of the glass. Okay,
so you just went thick.
Yep, I use a 5-inch thick box, so there's, you know, a good 2 inches on either side of the glass. I do nothing contacting the printed surface because I don't want anything to affect
rubbing
that
against,
artwork.
Right, yep.
I do seal them with the triple thick before they go out the door just because of temperature fluctuations and mishandling.
Right.
I don't want flakes coming out
right.
when you get your glass. It's going to show up
right.
like you saw it in the photographs. But yeah, I ship all over the world like that. I'm not upset with it because my system has just proved itself over time. I've shipped hundreds of glasses.
Great.
Do me a favor, plug your business.
I sell on eBay. My pinball company is Novation Pinball Supply, also JK Jeepers.
Awesome. We don't want to keep you from
cool.
your booth.
Yeah,
you
no, thanks,
back.
Man.
I mean, we like talking with you.
Dave!
Who?
Dave! D-A-V-E! Yeah, Dave!
Dave!
Right.
Hey, Dr. Dave here. And if you're looking for that special game you remember playing from your youth, restored by Craftsman to look and play like new condition, look no further as we may have it here in a restoration queue. Among the ones that are finished and ready for your game room are a look and play like new 1979 Bally Kiss with a new old stock clear-coated playfield and a look and play like new 1989 Gottlieb Caribbean Cruise Cocktail Table Multiplayer Multiball Pinball Machine. The following is a list of games in our restoration queue currently. Just drop us a line to let us know which title you desire. Once you put a deposit down for that title is marked for you. Drop us an email for more details at dave@pinballdoctor.com. That is Pinball Doctor, all spelled out, pinballdoctor.com. For 1990s games, we have Doctor Who, in Twilight Zone, 1980s, Bally Hot Doggin', Skateball, Flash Gordon, Embryon, Fireball 2, Sea Witch, Nine Ball, and Firepower, 1970s, Supersonic, Stingray, Paragon, and Superman, and lastly for the electromechanical era, Captain Fantastic, Top Score, Flipper Pool, and a 1958 Gottlieb Crisscross.